Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
OG.
Make some noise!
It's another edition of Inside Boxing Live, coming to you from the studios here in New York, New York. I'm your host, Dan Canobio. On this episode, we have a big one for you. Showtime Sean Porter calls us from Las Vegas. We'll get his thoughts on the Danny Garcia fight, how he really wants it, what he does in his off time, if he's happy with the PBC, and we'll talk about his beloved Cleveland Browns. From there, we'll also talk to LA Times' Lance Pugmire. Lance was a very good interview. He's one of the most informed boxing writers out there right now. He does a great job. I think he's like the Adam Schefter of boxing. He's always in the know, and he gives us some updates on Anthony Joshua and Deontay Wilder, as well as Canelo signing up for the VADA drug testing. You're not going to want to miss that interview with Lance Pugmire. As for what went down this weekend, we had a very busy night on Saturday night on Showtime. Actually, you can go back to Saturday afternoon. Showtime had three title fights in three countries. We'll just talk about what we saw in the late night portion of it. It was start off with Jojo Diaz and Gary Russell Jr. Really exciting TV-friendly fight, ultimately won by Gary Russell Jr. He fights. I'm looking forward to seeing him fight again in 2020. That was a joke on Twitter, is that this guy never fights, but he came out for his annual fight, and he looked good. I mean, you got to give him credit here. Everyone likes to get on him and call him TBA, because that's his next opponent. But you know, he went out there and he delivered. And his jab, he came out throwing a piston like jab. I know they kept saying that on the telecast, but you know, he threw career highs. If you want to go by the stats, he threw 992 punches. That's 83 punches per round. He threw 587 jabs. But Diaz, no slouch either. Diaz landed 192 punches, 151 power punches. Both those numbers were the highest ever landed on a Gary Russell opponent. So this one had all the makings for a great fight on paper. Ultimately delivered. Gary Russell wants to move on. Maybe he'll unify. And he'll fight Abner Maris versus Leo Santa Cruz winner. Maybe he can fight Lomachenko. Who knows? I mean, Gary Russell's in that stage of his career where he's going to want big fights because he's getting up there in age. The main event, Badu Jack and Adonis Stevenson, a fight through the first six rounds. Didn't really deliver a lot of action. It looked like Adonis Stevenson didn't come in the best of shape. Badu Jack didn't do a lot of work in those first six rounds, but things heated up in the second half of the fight where Badu Jack, he landed 6 of 22 punches per round. He ramped it up to 26 of 63 for the rest of the fight. Stevenson landed that hellacious body shot in the 11th that came out of absolutely nowhere. Even the Showtime broadcast crew didn't even pick up on it. And that's what ultimately got that fight to be a draw, because Badu Jack, all he had to do was win that 11th or 12th round. And the problem I have with this after the fight was Badu Jack's comments. It was maybe like 30 seconds after the fight was over with Jim Gray. He says that maybe the judges don't like Floyd Mayweather. I mean, come on, Badu Jack. Like, I love this guy. He fights all the best, but how about you don't have a finishing power, or you can't sense blood in the water and go for the win? How many times has he been in the close fights? How many times has he fought to a draw? Don't blame it on Floyd Mayweather. And the fact that you said it, you know, 30 seconds after your fight was over, you know, made me believe that you had this premeditated thought. You were going to say this if you knew there was going to be a close fight. Like, Floyd Mayweather is not preventing you from losing fights. Floyd Mayweather, how many fights did Floyd Mayweather win on the scorecards? So the judges don't dislike Floyd Mayweather, so enough with that. But I like Badu Jack. I wouldn't mind seeing a rematch between the two. As for Adonis Stevenson, I mean, he's ripe for the picking. I think any Bivol would destroy him. I think that Kovalev would beat both these guys. So the light heavyweight division continues to turn as they fight to a draw, so we'll see what happens with that. So that was the action from this weekend. We have some more fights coming up this weekend on ESPN, ESPN Plus. But for now, let's get into our interviews here. We have Lance Pugmire of the LA Times. All right, before we get to Lance Pugmire, I have to tell you about Jack Doyle's restaurant and bar. Jack Doyle's located on 35th and 7th, right in the heart of New York City. We'll be there in a few weeks doing our show live from their spacious bar. They got great drink specials, great place to watch the Yankees, Mets, UFC, boxing, soccer. You name it, they got it going on there, especially trivia night. I know it gets crazy there for that. So check out Jack Doyle's restaurant and bar located on 35th and 7th, the official sponsor of Inside Boxing Live. And with that, we're going to bring in LA Times' Lance Pugmire. Lance, thank you for taking the time to join us here on Inside Boxing Live.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
The reason I wanted to get you on is because I've always admired your work from afar. You do a great job for the LA Times, and you wrote an article last week about the negotiations between Anthony Joshua and Deontay Wilder. And in your story, you basically said that the two parties have hit somewhat of a snag over where the fight is going to be. Anthony Joshua wants the fight in the UK. Deontay Wilder obviously wants the fight in the US, probably in Las Vegas. So what's the latest on all that, and is that still what's holding up this fight from being, you know, solidified?
Yeah, and I wouldn't go as far as saying that it's a snag. I would say that it's you know, originally when Eddie Hearn was out here talking about his new streaming service that he'll be doing, he kind of came across as pretty dug in on the idea, as Anthony Joshua himself was after he won his fight in March, that, you know, he's from England. This is a fight that should be in the UK in his home. And that's it's basically the negotiating point they're starting from. But from what I'm hearing from the people that I'm talking to, there is an acknowledgement from that side that, you know, to generate the most money for this fight, they're going to have to come to the U.S. And that is something that Hearn and Joshua have admitted, you know, in previous conversations that I've had with them. So they know that this is where they're going to be able to maximize the revenue. And so the people that I was talking to said, look, that's where the negotiations are right now. You're not seeing a lot in the media because they're trying to get something done and not talk about it every step of the way. But the focus is definitely to try to bring the fight to the U.S., with the leading contenders being T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas and Barclays Center in New York.
Now, the fact you bring up a good point, and it was something that I was going to ask you next, is the fact that the Twitter talk has died down. You're not seeing Deontay Wilder post videos where he's talking about bags of money. There was Anthony Joshua over the weekend. I don't know if you saw this. He was doing some type of talk show where he said that he's going to F him up, which was interesting because, you know, once I feel like when he starts cursing, you know, maybe showing his hand a little bit. You know, you have to look into things like that. And the fact that, you know, he's talking about the referees and the judges, you know, pulling tricks on him. But the fact that the fight isn't being discussed in the media, we're not seeing a lot of Twitter talk about it, that's probably a good thing, right?
It's a good thing. And, you know, that it always seems to be the case, right? When when everyone's quieting down, they're actually working in offices trying to get a deal hammered out. And obviously, I think that for the sport's sake, you know, this is this would be the best fight that could be made this calendar year. And you know, we can only hope that calm, cool, smart heads will prevail and that we will see this fight in 2018.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense because, you know, Canelo Triple G is not a lock for September. So they have a window right now to make the fight and kind of steal the spotlight, so to say, and make the biggest fight. Because, you know, take a look at the boxing landscape. It's been such a good year in 2018, piggybacking off of the 2017 year. Just, you know, the fact that they should make this fight right now. I mean, if all parties, like you said, can come to a decision here, you know, there's no reason why this fight cannot be made.
I agree. I mean, one of the big points of debate among, you know, not just us boxing writers, but I think that people who follow this sport is, will this fight generate, you know, the money it's going to take to allow Anthony Joshua to, you know, collect his $50 million guarantee, at least without taking a loss. And I think that the more word of mouth, the longer that they have, you know, to promote this fight, and the more discussion is going on about how significant this fight is, it would be the biggest heavyweight fight, right, since Lennox Lewis and Mike Tyson in 2002. Perhaps even better when you're talking about two undefeated heavyweight champions fighting for four belts. I think that, you know, as long as we have that time to talk about a fight that is going to go down probably like in November or early December, the better. So I think that it does behoove them to get this thing done sooner rather than later.
Have you heard anything about the fact that if this does happen in December, let's just say it happens then and it doesn't happen in October, that maybe Joshua will take one more fight? And maybe that's with, you know, you've heard the name of Jarrell Miller being thrown around at Barclays. Do you see that coming into play? And then look, moving forward, the fact that this was also in your article, the fact that Joshua's fight deal with Showtime is up. I'm pretty sure it's after this next fight, or is it up now?
No, it's already expired. So,
okay, so that's another wrinkle added to that. I know you wrote about that in your article. Could we see HBO getting into the mix? And I know they have their own issues with the budget and stuff, but you know that could throw a wrinkle into this negotiation, the fact that maybe now Joshua will be a HBO fighter or not with Showtime. So could you see that being a little another snag, so to say?
Yeah, I think they've already tried to do that. I think that they're trying to, you know, steer Anthony Joshua toward HBO. But the bottom line is, and the tough part for Joshua is that if he does align himself with HBO, he's not going to be fighting Deontay Wilder, who's a Showtime fighter. So I think that, and he's going to be portrayed as someone who's dodging the fight. And I don't think he wants to do that. He wants to be the guy who's, you know, this is his moment. This is the moment to make this fight. Anything that he does other than that is going to be perceived as sort of running away from the fight that everyone knows that he should take. And that's the tricky part to maneuver around for both Eddie Hearn, who's trying to maximize every dollar that he can get out of Anthony Joshua, and Joshua himself, who, you know, obviously there's a lot of cachet in saying that I am the ultimate heavyweight champion and I am not running from anyone.
Now, I'll put you on the spot right now. When does the fight happen? Where does it happen? And how many buys?
I'm going to say that it does happen this year. I'm going to say let's be positive, right? There's enough negativity in our sport.
Yes,
let's hope that these guys can get it done. I think it happens in November. Obviously, I think the best place to stage the fight would be T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, the fight capital. And how many buys? You know, I think it can do about 500,000-600,000. I really do. I think that with a lot of time, a lot of buildup, these guys are both very charismatic personalities, and I think when they have the opportunity to make a bunch of talk show appearances and really hawk this fight, they're talking to them, they're pleading to the. To the masses here, when they talk to us about what a great fight this is going to be, we all know that, you know, this is going to be an epic heavyweight showdown. So it definitely has that going for it. They just need to get out there and have their personalities a little bit more promoted than they are. The fact that they haven't done a better job with Deontay Wilder is a shame. You know, it's a tough thing for PBC. To me, it's their greatest failing, because they've got a very charismatic, talkative heavyweight champion who is definitely being undersold.
Yeah. No, you say I'm a little surprised by that low of an estimate, because I would think that maybe they would get to a million, but you really think 500 to 600? Is that something you're hearing, or is that just a personal opinion?
I'm just guessing. I mean, maybe that's a little bit low. I mean, it would be great if they could get to a million, but I think that, you know, I think from where they are, I mean, you know, that would be a great number to achieve. Anything that they can do in excess of that would be an accomplishment, given that Joshua has never fought on pay-per-view in the U.S. and Wilder's never been on pay-per-view in the U.S. So,
you make good points, and the fact that there really hasn't, there's not a lot of pay-per-views anymore in boxing, just Canelo, pretty much Canelo and Triple G, and obviously they're having their issues too. So that's an interesting thing. I know that boxing fans are obsessed with pay-per-view numbers for some reason. I'll never understand why, but it's something to talk about. Let's switch gears a little bit to Canelo Alvarez. You wrote another article for the LA Times, and you've been in the know here. Canelo finally signs up for the VADA testing. In your opinion, or from people you've spoke to, did he do this because of the pressure he was feeling, or is this something that he was like, you know, for his own integrity?
I think that the pressure was kind of like the ultimate thing that got it done. A lot of us, you know, were starting to write about this situation of, you know, especially like we say, you know, perception can become reality if you're not careful. And I think that, you know, as he says, this is an accidental thing that happened with him with the clenbuterol. Mm-hmm. If he's not committed to year-round testing, I mean, this does not look very good. If you've got people who are sort of in the middle ground of is he dirty or clean, and he's perceived to be running away from the testers, then, you know, that doesn't look good. So for him, it was the move that needed to be made. The pressure, I think, was the sort of the last straw that got him there. And now he can point to that. It's a smart move, you know, no doubt about it. Now he can point to that and say, I'm signed up for year-round testing. You know, here we are 4 months before my fight. It's even beyond the time frame that I had for the last fight. So I'm fully committed to, you know, representing myself as a clean athlete. And it should calm all the negativity that they were hearing from the Golovkin side.
So it's pretty clear that Canelo is going to fight September 15th, regardless of who he's fighting. Obviously, everyone wants to see him fight Triple G. Triple G wants it. I assume so. I think he's kind of, you know, saying the right things, not exactly saying that Canelo's next. What's the latest with that? Have we heard any negotiations? This is two parties that, you know, seem to take their time with this, and I pin that mostly on Canelo. Have there been any discussions to your knowledge?
They've been talking. They have kind of maintained contact throughout. Both sides have said that this is the good news. I mean, I've got it from Oscar De La Hoya and Derek Gomez on the Canelo side and Tom Loeffler on the Golovkin side, that priority number one is to make this fight September 15th in Las Vegas. And I think that when you look at, you know, where Triple G is, he wants to deal with this blemish on his record. And I think when you look at where Canelo is, I mean, he's coming off this situation where it looks like he, you know, some people believe that he was doping to prepare for the fight. So he wants to prove that, no, I wasn't doping. I just accidentally ate some, you know, carne asada or whatever. And I'm going to show and prove it in the ring that I'm the better man. So, you know, one other thing beyond that is, like, look, let's be honest. In the last month, it's been pretty brutal for Golden Boy. I mean, they've lost the Linares fight for a title. He lost his belt. Mm-hmm. Jojo Diaz was fighting for a belt on Saturday. He lost.
They've got Ali.
Saddam Ali lost his belt. And you've got Lucas Matisse, probably the underdog against Manny Pacquiao. Yeah. So I think for Golden Boy's sake, you know, where is the richest fight? And there's no doubt about it. The richest fight to make is Gennady Golovkin.
Yeah, that's true. And then right now, Golden Boy has him, and they have Ryan Garcia, who was a big hit over in L.A. and is an interesting fella. Before we let you go, you bring up Matisse. What's the latest on Pacquiao Matisse? You're seeing some headlines that the fight could be in jeopardy. I don't know, Bob Arum is, you know, show me the money, Bob Arum says. So I know that you spoke with Michael Kahns recently. What did he tell you?
Yeah, he just there was a report out there that the financing of the fight was in trouble, and that's something that has been said, you know, throughout this thing. Whenever you're taking a fight into an overseas market that has really never staged the fight of this significance, I think there's a lot of doubt and skepticism about, do these people have the money or not? Kahns assures that the money is coming in. Is it maybe coming in a little bit slower than expected? Yes. Are they as promoters, you know, being a little bit slower than they should be in regards to getting the tickets ready and having the stadium all sized and everything like that? Yes. But he assures that the fight is going to happen on that date. Matisse is the perfect opponent for Pacquiao, Michael Kahns believes. And Manny has put out some statements too that there's no doubt about it that this fight will happen on that day.
They're seeing all the training videos and minus Freddie Roach. It's weird to see Pacquiao training with someone other than Freddie Roach, but Boo Boy is now stepped up, and that's what we're going to see. But Lance, thank you very much for joining us here at Inside Boxing Live. Go out and read Lance's work in the LA Times. The LA Times does great work. They dedicate a lot of their time to boxing, and you're one of the best info men in boxing. So I thank you very much for joining us, and I look to see you at ringside.
Thank you so much. Anytime.
Another busy week in boxing. The summer schedule is really starting to heat up. A lot of headlines, a lot of trash talking, a lot of everything going on. So what we do here at Inside Boxing Live, we wrap it all up in the segment that we call In Case You Missed It.
Canelo enrolls in VADA drug testing.
Yes, if you've seen this, Canelo Alvarez, finally, he gives in. He finally is less defiant. than he has been over the last year, and he enrolls in the VADA drug testing, the year-round program. If you caught our show last week, Kevin Ioli says that every fighter should be in this, but you only have to technically be in it when during your training camp. So Canelo Alvarez, he finally concedes. He joins the VADA drug testing, and now, you know, we can move forward with the negotiations with Triple G. At least Canelo is doing the right thing now. He's giving off the perception that he is clean, whether he is or not. We'll never really know. But now he'll be drug tested, you know, right now. You know, he probably has been drug tested a few times already, and before he even gets into his official training camp with Gennady Golovkin. So that's good news there. People want to see this, so Canelo Alvarez is enrolled, and let's see if we'll take some hair samples next.
Tyson Fury will fight Sefer Safari on June 9th.
Wow. This one, didn't see this one coming. I mean, I don't really know who Sefer Safari is. Is he a made-up person? He's 39 years old. He's not even the most famous Safari. Apparently, his brother has a better record and is a better fighter than him. But I looked up. He's from Albania. He holds a record of 23 wins and 24 fights, with 21 wins coming by way of knockout. His sole career loss came to WBA heavyweight world champion Manuel Char, who he was outpointed. He went the distance with Char. We knew we weren't going to get a live, you know, a live dog against Tyson Fury. We knew he was going to be fighting, you know, a lesser opponent. This guy's a cruiserweight, so this would be his first fight. Well, not his first fight, but he's a career cruiserweight. So, I mean, Tyson Fury's back. June 9th, we'll see the return of the Mac. He's down 7 stone. I still don't know what that means, but he actually looks good. I've been looking at his Instagram, his YouTube, and like, whatever. He's everywhere, but you could definitely see that he's slimmed down. So Tyson Fury, he's back June 9th against Sefer Safari. I'm looking forward to that one.
Pacquiao Matisse in danger of being postponed.
Yes, Pacquiao Matisse, we just spoke with Lance Pugmire, and he kind of brought us up to speed on this one. Michael Kahn's, he gave him a phone call, and Kahn said, "This is absolutely fake news. The fight is going forward." But how many times has Kahn said something, and the absolute opposite has happened? You know, I go to Bob Arum when anything with Manny Pacquiao is related. And how many times have we heard Manny Pacquiao's going to be fighting Qatar? Manny Pacquiao's going to be fighting on the moon. He's going to be fighting everywhere. But it always comes down to the money. And now that this Malaysia people haven't really put up the money on their end, it's trickling in from everything I've heard. But according to Michael Kahn's, the fight is 100% happening. You see Pacquiao training on Instagram, minus Freddie Roach with Boo Boy. You know, so nothing, you know, from the powers that be are letting you believe that this fight is in danger. But there are some rumblings, and, you know, sometimes these rumors, they're correct. But Manny Pacquiao Matisse is in a little bit of trouble for happening in mid-July.
Floyd Mayweather says Gervonta Davis would have KO'd Lomachenko.
Yeah, this was he said this before this weekend when he was front and center, and by front and center, I mean really front and center as a promoter for Badu Jack. He says Mayweather believes that Davis would have KO'd Lomachenko. Then, you know, on the other side of the flip side of this, you know, a lot of people don't think that Gervonta Davis is ready for a Lomachenko. But I will say this. If we see the same Gervonta Davis that we saw a month ago at the Barclays Center when he just decimated Cuellar in, what, 3 rounds? And he was focused, and he could tell that he was motivated, and he says a motivated tank is a dangerous tank. I 100% agree with that. I think this fight is maybe 2 to 3 years away. You know, the ultimate marination. As Bob Arum says, they got to let this one marinate a little bit. Let them have a few title defenses, but you never know. You know, the money could come calling. And one thing we've seen from Top Rank and ESPN with his new deal is that they are willing to pay out their opponents to get the fights done. So I wouldn't be surprised if you saw it, but my guess is that fight's like 2 years away.
Kenny Porter says Keith Thurman is faking his injuries.
Yes, and we will talk to Kenny Porter's son, Sean Porter, coming up next on the show. And this was interesting because Kenny Porter, if you ever have watched any videos of him, if you ever seen him in an arena, the guy's got swagger. He comes strutting in to the arena. He's usually dressed to the nines, and they put a camera in his face. And one thing we know about him, he's not Angel Garcia. He's not going to spout off something crazy. It's going to be a calculated opinion that he comes up with, or a calculated take. And his take was that, I don't think that Keith Thurman really injured his hand most recently. And I also don't think he was in a car accident. He said there were no documents on the car. There were no police reports. So he did some searching, Kenny Porter. He didn't just, you know, pull this out of thin air. He really went forward here. And we'll get Sean Porter's thoughts on his dad saying this and what he thinks of his dad coming out and speaking on his behalf. And they have a very interesting relationship, Kenny and Sean Porter. But it's interesting because Keith Thurman is now completely out of the picture. He hasn't even given a timetable on when he's going to be back. Now he's saying it's a hand injury. He relinquishes his belt. Will we see Sean Porter versus Danny Garcia next sometime in the second half of 2018 for the WBC belt? I would like to see that, and that remains to be seen. But Kenny Porter coming out here saying that Keith Thurman's faking his injury. Something to keep an eye on here moving forward with the show. But there it is. In case you missed it, here it is on Inside Boxing Live. All right, our next guest here on Inside Boxing Live, he's one of the best welterweights in the world right now. He's clamoring for a big fight. He's Showtime Sean Porter. Before we get to Sean Porter, I have to tell you about Jack Doyle's restaurant and bar. Jack Doyle's located right in the heart of New York City, 35th and 7th. If you're on the west side of Manhattan, if you're visiting New York, you're a tourist, and you want to go to a nice sports bar where you get the full atmosphere of American sports and drinks and all that stuff, go to Jack Doyle's. Tell him the Inside Boxing Live crew sent you. Here he is, Sean Porter. Showtime Sean Porter calling us from Las Vegas. Sean, thanks for joining us here on the show.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me. I got the call yesterday to do this and was pretty interested. I've met with you a couple of times and we've talked about copy box numbers and stats and all that.
Yeah.
So it's cool to be on the line with you guys right now.
Oh, that's awesome. Thanks for coming on. The thing with you is, like, so many guys right now in boxing, they're content with, you know, one to two fights a year. There's so many. Just this weekend, we saw Gary Russell fight a guy that's in there, what, once a year? And Adonis Stevenson, a guy who's very inactive. You're a guy that, you know, you would fight tomorrow if the call was placed for you. You know, how frustrating is it for you to kind of be waiting for that big fight? I know you want Danny Garcia. I know you want Errol Spence, et cetera. You know, how frustrating has it been for you the last couple months?
It's kind of weird. Because for me, I train pretty much year round. I usually don't take too much time off. And so for me, it's like my job is ongoing.
Yeah.
And it's not until I actually sit down and count the months that I realize how long it's been since I've had a fight. You know, because I'm always training, preparing, you know, thinking about this or that guy that I'm going to fight. I guess maybe I play it up so much in my head that I feel like, you know, the fight is closer than it ever is. But you know, that's my decision. My decision is to fight more. My decision is to be in the ring against the best and do it while I have it, while I'm at my best, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Guys like Gary Russell and even Adonis Stevenson, I think both of those guys have decided to kind of manage their career in a different way. And you've heard Gary Russell say, you know, on TV, you know, it's allowed him time to preserve his body.
Yeah.
So that's the number one thing that I do take from not being able to be as active as I want to be is the fact that I'm not, you know, getting hit. I'm not, you know, my body isn't, you know, going through all of the war and the heat mm-hmm. of the battle that I've gone through, you know, over the years. So
yeah,
I guess
like
it does. Go you know, ahead. It's more of a double-edged sword.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's like a catch-22 because a lot of guys, you know, the ring rust, that's a thing. I mean, you're out of the ring for a while, you get a little rusty, and it's like the age-old question, is it better to fight 3 to 4 times a year and stay active, or is it better to fight 1 or 2 times a year so, you know, you're like you said, your body's preserved? What do you think?
Well, you know what? The thing that I always say is, you know, boxers are much smarter now than they were in the past. In the past, they were fighting crazy a couple times a month.
Even, yeah, yeah. You know?
And we're smarter in that respect that we understand our bodies better. And, you know, obviously our check's a little bit more lucrative now. but at the same time, we're hurting ourselves sometimes when we decide to stay out or try to wait on that perfect fight because, you know, at the same time, you're missing out on another opportunity to showcase your skills and your talents and things of that nature. So, like you said before, man, it really is a double-edged sword, a catch-22, because, you know, on one hand, you're doing something that is healthy and beneficial to your life, but at the same time, you're hurting that as well at the same time.
Yeah, you're a gym rat, so you're always ready. Has the WBC contacted you? I know that now that Keith Thurman has relinquished the belt, you know, the obvious fight now is between you and Danny Garcia. Have you heard from the WBC? Do you call them? How does that work?
That's the obvious fight. I've done my best to remain calm and patient and allow my management to do their job, which usually gets done. I'm not going to say usually, always gets done. So I don't call the WBC. I have contacted them before, but I do. I try to do my best to allow my management to do their job and myself do my job is just, you know, being prepared for when that call does come. As much as I know, the next fight in line for that WBC is myself and Danny Garcia, as it should be. I can't think of any other fight out there that is more deserving of that title shot than myself and also Danny Garcia as well. But as far as the timeline is when, where, I don't know just yet.
Yeah, because, you know, you think about the welterweight division, and it's something we've talked about a lot on the show with numerous guests. It's like there's so many good fighters, and it's so top-heavy, and we don't know what the logical step next is, like who fights Keith Thurman, who fights Errol Spence. But now that, you know, Thurman is kind of ducked out of the position, part, I don't mean to use the word duck, but he's no longer in the picture right now. So, yeah, you're right. The clear shot or the clear fight is you and Danny Garcia. And I was working the Showbox fight in Philly 2 weeks ago, and Devin Haney was the main event, and Danny Garcia was there. I'm sure you saw the interview that he did, and he said, you know, come fight me in Philly, and you know, I'm pretty sure you're willing to fight him anywhere. That's not an issue, right? Like, you would fight this guy, you know, anywhere.
I'm willing to fight him anywhere, just for the sole fact that I'm fighting for the WBC title. Outside of that, you know, it's just, you know, going to his hometown to fight him, not really interested. But the fact that we're going to be fighting for the WBC title, we can fight in Idaho. We can fight in
South Dakota.
We can fight in South Dakota. We can fight in anywhere. It doesn't matter. As long as I'm fighting for that WBC title, I know what's in my heart. I know what I want to do. And, you know, the number one goal for me is to be a WBC champion.
Now, I see that you're making these hype videos, and I like them, man. They're really funny. And how do those come about? I mean, like, you see people think of Sean Porter, you're like, you're a gentleman, you're a calm, cool, collective. And then I go on your Twitter, and, you know, you're cutting WWE promos. How do those come about? And you're probably having fun with those, right?
Man, having fun. I think, you know, to sum it all up, that's all it is.
Right.
Me wanting to have fun and show a side of myself that you don't normally get to see. You know, most of these interviews are, you know, they're more formal, mm-hmm. cut and dry, you know, Q&A. Same thing with a press conference, you know, unless you are, I can't even think of anyone off the top of my head who would, you know, come to the press conference and, you know, you're already expecting something silly.
Tyson Fury, maybe.
Yeah. Tyson Fury. So, you know, for the most part, you know, for myself, I've always been just kind of cut and dry. You know, my interviews are exciting and fun and everything, but they're not what I've been able to show through social media.
Yeah.
So when I decided to start doing, you know, now two videos on social media, it was just a thing of me wanting to show a different side of myself. And when I did Macho Man Randy Savage, that one just kind of popped into my head out of nowhere, and I went with it. And then someone sent me the video of Danny Garcia's dad doing a video about the WBC.
Yeah.
And they said, you should do a video answering, kind of like, you know, going back at him about mm-hmm. this or whatever. I jumped in my car and I ran to Burger King to see if they had a crown for me, and just kind of try to play it up from there. I hope everyone out there is more so appreciating that than they are just looking at it like, oh, Sean's a crap talker now, because it's not so much me wanting to talk crap as it is me having fun.
Yeah, exactly.
And obviously knowing how to play the dozens a little bit, you know, I can jab the jaw a little bit as well. So
yeah, yeah,
it's been fun.
Yeah, I enjoy them, and it's boxing. It's entertainment. I mean, you're promoting yourselves. You only fight, you want to fight a lot, but a lot of these guys fight one or two times a year, so you constantly have to, drum up the masses, like you said, get people to talk about it.
That was another thing too, was understanding that. It kind of, clicked to me not too long ago that, man, I'm only fighting, once a year, possibly twice a year. People aren't getting to see the exciting Sean Porter that they are used to seeing. And, what better way than the time that we live in now to use social media as a platform to, be seen by thousands and possibly even millions of people.
Yeah.
Doing something that they wouldn't normally get to see you do. So yeah. It's been fun.
Do you like Danny Garcia? Like, do you have a problem with him? I mean, you guys have obviously been in, the same rooms before. Do you have any issues with the way his career has gone? Maybe his dad, or is there any like personal animosity between the two of you?
It's so strange. Like, him and I go all the way back to the amateur program, right. But he was 132 pounds. I was 165 pounds. And the funny thing is, we would walk into the same room and it was like, we're so much further away from fighting each other, but we were never even close to being core to one another. It was never even the head nod to one another, And so now being in the same weight class and, him getting fights that I've wanted to get and, the list goes on from there. It's not so much a jealousy thing as it is me looking at this guy like, I can beat you. Let's make the fight. And it's taking this long to make a fight happen with him. So I would say, more than anything, I've had a dislike for him just from wanting to fight him and him, not being, that champion that he's claimed to be and getting in the ring to fight me. So I think now he's come to a point where he can't, look left or right.
Yeah, you're right. There's a lot of pressure on him right now, especially, coming off his last fight, Brandon Rios, a guy that, was game, but, was obviously past his prime a little bit. Another thing with this fight that could be interesting wrinkle is the fact that you both have fathers that are very much involved in your career. Your dad, Kenny Porter, is a character. Angel Garcia, where do you even start with that guy? He's out of his mind. But your dad made some headlines recently. He says that Keith Thurman is faking his injuries. I mean, a lot of people do think that. I mean, it's a different thought process on exactly what's going on with Keith Thurman. Do you kind of agree with your dad there, or do you kind of let your dad do his own talking?
First off, I've always allowed my dad to do his own talk. We kind of have this dynamic where, he kind of knows what I'm thinking and I know what he's thinking, and we can kind of play off of each other. I think Danny Garcia and Angel Garcia are a little different in the respect that Danny just kind of looks at his dad as his dad goes on these rants and does whatever. And kind of cast Danny out in the background. But I've always, when it came to Keith Thurman and his injuries or whatnot, I've always kind of looked at my dad through the side of my eye, because me being as big of a competitor as I am, I just can't imagine someone wanting to fake injuries and things of that nature instead of doing the bigger thing, which is getting in the ring and, conquering your opponent and being called number one, being called the greatest,
Yeah.
So whenever there's an injury that has come up for Keith, dating all the way back to when he got into his car accident before we fought, my dad kept saying, I think he faked the injury. I think something's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at my dad like, man, this is a bit much to draw up and fake. I mean, I think this is legit,
Yeah.
But I will say this about Keith. At this point in his career and his life, the things that he has going on, I can assure you that if and when he gets back into the ring, he will be 100% solely focused on the fight and not focused on any pre-injury, any type of damage done to his body or anything like that at all. I know that Keith is he's a really smart, intelligent guy.
Mm-hmm.
before he is a fighter, and so he's not going to get into the ring if he doesn't feel 100% confident in himself and also in the parts of his body that has been injured. So I do know that. I know that when we see Keith back in the ring, we won't see a Keith in the ring who's looking for an excuse to get out We won't see a Keith who's looking for a reason to call out his injury and fake the funk. He's going to get in the ring when he knows that he's 100% and he's ready to be the dog that he's always been.
It sounds like you have like a big respect for Keith Thurman. You guys put on a really good fight on CBS, you know, borderline fight of the year. It's a little different tone that you have with Keith than Danny Garcia. Keith Thurman like a buddy of yours, or is it just like a mutual respect between the two of you?
Definitely a mutual respect, but Keith and I, again, like we go all the way back to the amateurs as well. But, you know, Keith and I, even though I was one weight class above him, we competed together a little bit against a couple of other countries and things like that. So we did develop somewhat of a friendship before even turning professional. And I think, you know, upon getting in the ring and doing what we did that night, I think we both, you know, saw the bigger picture there, which was that, you know, even though there was a winner and a loser that night, both of us, you know, won over the fans.
Yes.
And both of us made a very big statement for ourselves as far as our careers go, you know. So
yeah, definitely.
I think we when you think about a champion and who that champion has fought, there should come a day where, you know, I'll be spoken as, well, did he fight Sean Porter, you know, or did he fight Keith Thurman, or did he fight Errol Spence, you know. Mm-hmm. I think right now those are the three names that will last in boxing for a long time. And when you look up champions in this era, you will look to see if they fought myself, if they fought Keith Thurman, if they fought Errol Spence.
Yeah, you're right. It's like the, you know, in the 80s when the 147-pound division was just like a round robin of everyone fighting each other. So you bring up a good point. And while we're talking conspiracy theories with about Keith Thurman's career, and, you know, there's a rumor out there that he's unhappy with the PBC and he's kind of waiting out his contract so he can be maybe a free agent and make some either more money or fight more. You know, I mean, it got me thinking about the PBC, and it's been around for, 3 years now. And I know there are some fighters that have, you know, voiced their displeasure with them, and there are fighters that have jumped ship, like Danny Jacobs, sort of say, and went over to HBO. With all your trouble that you've been going through getting fights and, you know, getting these dates and everything, are you happy with the PBC?
You know, I'm surprised to hear that. I know that there's a little bit more that goes into it than just PBC. But from my end, yeah, I'm happy with what I've been able to do. From a public standpoint with PBC, and that's pretty much all I have to say about that. I think that anyone, like, we'll take Daniel Jacobs, for instance. Daniel Jacobs did the best thing for his career. He didn't do something against PBC. He did the best thing for his career, you know. So I think moving forward, anybody that, quote-unquote, jumps ship or moves forward with any other company or anything like that, they are more than likely doing what's best for their career, because at this point, I think we all owe a big thanks to PBC. Mm-hmm. Before PBC, we were only being seen by, you know, a multitude of thousands. Now we're being seen by, you know, 100 times what we've been seen by before because of PBC. So, no, I don't think there's gonna ever be any hard lashing at PBC.
Right.
I know that, you know, the company as a whole is doing the best that they can. Just so many fighters in every weight division, you know, so mm-hmm. you got to try to figure out a way to spread the sugar, and, you know, so that everybody gets a good helping. But,
yeah,
you know, it'll come a time where, you know, we can't duck anyone. We can't choose who we want to fight, just like this fight with Danny Garcia and myself. Mm-hmm. You know, we put ourselves in a great line where, you know, whether he wants to fight me or he wants to fight someone else, I want to fight him or I want to fight someone else. The collective goal here is the WBC title, and that's put him in line for me and me for him, you know. So that's how boxing is shaping up now, and I think it's getting exciting. And there's nothing but great days ahead for boxing.
Now, obviously, you've had a lot of time to think about your career as you are, you know, you want this fight with Danny Garcia, and I'm sure you read the headlines and you see that Eddie Hearn is a guy that is, you know, he wants you, he wants Errol Spence, he wants everyone under the sun. If you lace up boxing gloves and you are a prominent name like yourself, he wants you. Have you heard from Eddie Hearn, and what are your thoughts on his new streaming whatever you want to call it?
I did. I heard about the new streaming thing that he's got going on, and I actually watched the last promotion that he did with David Hay, and I thought that the streaming was done pretty well, and mm-hmm. and pretty exciting to see that the fight was on over here, because there was a fight on the undercard that I really wanted to see. My dad had a heavyweight over there,
gotcha,
fighting on the undercard, and I know that my dad has been in contact with Eddie Hearn from that standpoint of that fighter. I don't think my dad is doing any business as far as I'm concerned, and I know him and I both have the same mindset that we want to stay where we are mm-hmm. with Al Haymon and PBC as well.
Okay, cool. Before we let you go, I know a lot of people, they like to give you shit for not calling out Errol Spence, but the reason behind that is because you're not ranked in the IBF, and where Spence has a belt. Now, you know, with Thurman obviously not in the picture, and, you know, Danny Garcia not exactly, you know, that fight isn't 100%. You know, would you be willing to fight an Errol Spence now that he could be in the WBC picture?
Let me sum this up for you, because it's so interesting that you brought up the ranking, because I don't look at rankings. And a really good friend of mine called me on the phone, and they were, you know, just asking some pretty basic questions. And they asked when I would fight Errol Spence. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know what? I don't know. I know that fight is going to happen before I retire, but I don't know when that fight is going to happen. I said, I'm in line to fight for the WBC, and he has the IBF.
Right.
And I said, when I lost the IBF, I'm pretty sure they took me out of the rankings. And I don't know if you look in there right now, but I'm not sure if I'm ranked in the IBF. So he goes and he takes a look. And he says, Sean, you're not ranked in the IBF. I said, that's pretty crazy, right? He said, yeah, that is. I said, here's the crazy part. The crazy part is I'm top 5 in the world. Arguably, if you want to argue it, I'm top 6. Hmm. Okay, if you want to say the most outrageous thing, I'm top 10 in the world. And he said, yeah, you are. He said, you know, top 5 easily. He said, even top 3 maybe. And he said, you know, definitely top 6 and top 10. I said, the crazy thing is I'm top 10 arguably in the world, and I'm not in the top 10 of the IBF ranking.
Boxing for
he
you.
He said, that's crazy. I said, if you go to the WBC, you'll see that I'm ranked 2 in the WBC, I believe. And I said, go to the WBC real quick and tell me if Errol Spence is ranked in the WBC. He goes and he says, no, Errol Spence isn't ranked in the top 10 of the WBC. I said, now how crazy is it that this title holder, who is arguably top 2 in the world, I said, we're not going to fake the funk. I'm not going to, you know, hate on him. I said, he's top 2 in the world. I said, easily top 3. I said, there's no way he's not top 5. In the world, I said, there's no way you can say he's top 10 in the world. How can this guy who has a belt and be ranked in the top 3, top 5, and top 10 in the world not be ranked in the WBC? He said, I don't know, that's crazy. I said, that's how boxing works.
Boxing, man. It's all about those sanctioning fees.
I'm just kicking the knowledge to you right
now.
Yeah,
I like it.
No matter what the public says, no matter what we think makes sense, sometimes politically, sometimes in the boxing world, sometimes in the business of boxing, it may not make sense.
Yeah.
And it makes sense for myself to fight Danny Garcia and then go on to fight Errol Spence or Keith Thurman. But right now, yep, without a belt, I'm not ranked to even fight Errol Spence. No, it sounds crazy.
Right.
And you look at it and you say, man, he's one of the best fighters in the welterweight division. He should be fighting Errol Spence. Yeah, I should fight Errol Spence. But from a business standpoint, from the standpoint of rankings, it doesn't make sense. So right now, if I don't have a belt, there's no point in me fighting Errol Spence. He's not going to want to fight me when he has a chance to unify titles. He's not going to want to fight me if I'm not bringing anything to the table other than obviously a major fight and some major money. I'm not bringing a belt to the table. I'm not bringing anything that is long-lasting other than, you know, the fact that he may beat me, I may beat him. You know, so right now, for me to call out Errol Spence, from a business standpoint, it doesn't make sense.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right.
From the standpoint of my team going after the WBC, it doesn't make sense. So for anyone out there wondering when Sean is going to fight Errol Spence, if he wants to fight Errol Spence, Sean Porter 100% wants to and will fight Errol Spence before he retires. And that's coming from Sean Porter himself.
Love it.
When I don't know, but it's a lot like I said when I started this interview. I don't know when I'm going to fight Danny Garcia. I just know that that's the next fight out there for me.
I mean, yeah, you heard it right from the horse's mouth, right from Sean Porter himself. That's the one thing I wanted you to clear up, and I'm happy that you got the chance to do it, was about Errol Spence, because everyone thinks everyone's ducking Errol Spence. But one thing we know about you is that you don't duck anybody. You want the biggest fights, and you sound like you're confident that you will get it done before you hang up the gloves. Sean Porter.
Here's the thing. Let me say this. Here's the thing. My favorite sport is football. My favorite sport is in boxing. But in football, you have – they announced the list of I'm sorry, my
schedule?
Head is going, but yeah, they announced the schedule they announced the schedule what, like in February or something,
right? Yeah,
like,
yeah.
The season doesn't even begin in August, so you know who's gonna play who, and you know the best is gonna go up against the best, mm-hmm. at some point, obviously in the Super Bowl. So you know my first Super Bowl is gonna be this fight with Danny Garcia. And then definitely down the line, there's no schedule yet, but I'm putting it out there that Sean Porter will fight Errol Spence. If we don't fight, something crazy will have had to happen in order for us not to fight, because I know Errol Spence is a like me. Mm-hmm. He loves what he does and he wants to fight the best. I'm the exact same way, and so that fight will happen. That I think that is a fight that once we began talking about that fight, it won't take much time for that fight to get made, because him and I, we just want to fight, and we want to fight against the best. So,
yeah, and that's one thing. It. Yeah, it's the thing about you. Everyone knows that you want to fight. Sean, I know you're a big Browns fan. How many wins will they have? Will they have more than zero?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're disrespecting me right now by asking that question. So
you got Baker Mayfield now. Are you happy with that pick?
I'm going to go ahead and – well, you know what? We got Baker Mayfield, but he's going to be behind Tyrod Taylor.
True.
And let's not forget that Tyrod Taylor is a playoff quarterback.
He got the Bills to the playoffs.
Yeah, he's got the playoff. He got the Bills to the playoffs. Granted, they didn't win that game, but the fact of the matter is he got them there,
right,
which will allow me to say that we'll get more than – one win this year. I'm looking at maybe 6 to 7 wins.
All right.
And then, you know, maybe even playoff contention in the year or two. So
I'm not
biting myself in the butt by saying that right now.
We're going to hold you to it.
Man, we boxing fan or football Browns fans, man, we are super optimistic.
Yeah.
And no matter what, we think our team's going to win all the way to the last ticking clock.
Yeah. Are you happy? Are you happy that they are on Hard Knocks, or do you think that's a distraction?
Man, I thought that was so cool. I'm excited, because one thing I keep NFL Network on my television, and the one thing I'm always looking to see that I don't get to see, which makes sense, is the Browns are never highlighted.
No, they're not.
They're never highlighted. They're never talked about. And I think now, because of the moves they've made in the offseason, in the trades, and then also their draft this year was pretty decent. Last year's draft. Pretty decent as well, and I think because of those movements there, they decided to put them on Hard Knocks. I don't think that is going to be a distraction. I've dealt with, you know, the day-to-day media and the day-to-day cameras.
Yeah, and the all access and whatnot.
Yeah, if anything, it's going to make them, you know, it's going to make them step up. Yeah. Nobody wants to look bad on TV.
You're right. Sean Porter, one of the better minds in the sport, and a guy that fans should know wants to fight them all. Thank you for coming up with us on Inside Boxing Live. We'll see you ringside soon, man.
Had fun, man. Have a great day.
All right, thank you. Guess what, everybody? Twitter Hitters is back. We took a little hiatus from chronicling everyone's tweets. I got a little tired of it. Also, people weren't just tweeting good stuff. So this past week, I got back on and back on the saddle for another edition of Twitter Hitters. Here we go. We'll start with Gervonta Davis. If you're not caught up to speed on everything that's going on in Gervonta Davis's life, he this is a subtweet. He said, "Let's just spar and get it off our chest." And you know, I don't want to do a little Sherlock Holmes here, investigating. And I think it's about Floyd Mayweather, because last week he had a comment about how he was upset with the way that Mayweather is promoting his career. There are a lot of rumblings that these two don't get along, a lot of stuff that is just some big-time rumors and some real heinous things about Gervonta Davis and Mayweather. But apparently he said, let's just get in there and spar it out. And you know what? I'd pay How much does it cost for this new Eddie Hearn streaming thing? $30 a month? I'd pay, I wouldn't pay that much, but I would love to see Mayweather and Gervonta Davis, and Mayweather kind of like push him around in there and beat him up and teach him a little lesson here. But I thought that was interesting to see Gervonta Davis upset with the way that he's being promoted, and then he goes on the Twitter machine like everyone does these days, and he fires off a subtweet. Something to keep an eye on. Moving forward here, Twitter haters. Jojo Diaz fought over the weekend a tough-fought loss to Gary Russell Jr. He says he's going to be back. And, you know, he started off by saying he should have started the fight a little earlier. Sorry to all my fans. I'll come back stronger than ever. I love you all. And Dan Rafael responded, nothing to be ashamed of. Good fight. Roman Gonzalez got on there. I can't translate that, but I'm sure it was Hermano's brother. So he did good. And I know so Errol Spence also reached out. So that's the thing. You can, as long as you step up and you fight in a really big fight and it's an entertaining fight, everyone's going to have your back and we're going to want to see you again. I want to see Jojo Diaz fight again after watching that fight. He was just happened to be in the ring with a really good fighter in Gary Russell Jr. He went to the body really nice, but he says he'll be back, and that's the one thing about Twitter I like is when the fighters get on there like right after their fight and they talk to their fans. Speaking of talking to their fans, Oscar De La Hoya, a guy that doesn't care what you think about him, he gets onto the Twitter machine and he says, "What an amazing fight. Congratulations, Gary Russell Jr. and Jojo Diaz Jr. In 1 week, Golden Boy, 4 world title fights with 4 different promoters on 3 networks. Fights for the fans, real promoter." So, Oscar, you know, on one end, I've heard both sides of the spectrum here. On one side of the coin, you have to give credit to De La Hoya for making fights with Top Rank, making fights with K2 or whoever it be, all the other promoters that he does fights with. And on the other side, all 4 of his fighters lost. So, are we going to get upset over the fact that, or make fun of him because all 4 of his fighters lost? And on the same end, you can't also congratulate him for putting on fights. You know, the fans want it. You can't have it both ways. So what is it? Are you are the Golden Boy fighters not on the same level as the Top Rank guys and the PBC guys? Or should we just be happy that these fights are happening and we're getting entertained every weekend? You know, so it's up for debate. And that's when someone responded. And this is when Oscar De La Hoya's Twitter becomes the best, is when he gets into his mentions and he starts retweeting people and following. A couple weeks ago, he was chirping at a guy that said no one wants to watch Canelo fight. And he went off at like 2 in the morning, which usually when he does a lot of his tweeting. This time it was at 2:38 p.m. when Danny Buccio tweeted, how disappointing are you right now? That has to be because of the 4 losses that I just talked about. That's when De La Hoya said, why would I be disappointed when I'm the only promoter willing to make good fights, win or lose, loose for the fans? See, that's the problem with De La Hoya. I mean, yes, you're not the only guy making fights with other promoters. Top Rank does it all the time. They did it last weekend. I mean, you're not the only promoter. That's when Oscar really opens himself up for criticism here. I commend him for making fights with everyone, but just don't say that you're the only one doing it because everyone's doing it. Just say that boxing is in a good place right now. How about that? Last one here. Last Twitter hitter. We're back, and George Foreman. It would be a segment on Twitter hitters without arguably the best tweeter over 70 years old. That is George Foreman. Princess Casey tweeted at him. Interesting handle there. Why did you name all your kids George Foreman? And George with an unbelievable answer. Just shows you how smart this guy is. Making preparation for memory loss. Frazier, Ali, Holyfield, and Cooney all hit me. How many names can you memorize? Ha 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 ha. See, I love this. I love it. This just shows you that George Foreman is one step ahead of us. He was one step ahead of us with that grill. And he's one step ahead of us naming all his kids named George. And I was just emailing with his son, George III, trying to get Big George to come on the program. His son, George III, who I met a few times at Bleacher Report when I was working there. Great guy. And he's got a bunch of gyms popping up all over the country. Everyone Fights, it's called. So we're trying. We're trying to get George on the program. Maybe we'll have to reach out to him on Twitter because that seems to be the only way to get a hold of George Foreman. That's it for Twitter hitters. Maybe we'll be back next week. But for now, you're going to have to just enjoy what we put out there today. Another show comes to a close. Inside Boxing Live number 18. It's a wrap for today. A special thanks to our guests, Showtime Sean Porter and LA Times Lance Pugmire. As for boxing this weekend, you have to go on to ESPN Plus. Top Rank's putting on an all-Filipino title fight. That's an historic night. The first time that's ever happened, when Jerwin Encajas takes on Jonas Soltan. So expect plenty of Manny Pacquiao references. Expect plenty of calf talk. All that good stuff. And probably a really good fight, because the Filipinos, they come to fight. That's one thing we know about them. After that, I think the following week is when we have, finally, Jeff Horn versus Terrence Crawford. I feel like that fight's been talked about for like 5 years now. But they'll finally get it on. That's another fight on ESPN+. We'll be front and center for that one. I think we're setting up another podcast or another show from Jack Doyle's Restaurant and Bar over on 35th and 7th. So if you're in the area on June 4th and you want to come hang out with us and take some pictures and all that good stuff, come on down, because that's the next time you'll be hearing from us. Great job from our producer, Nick Canobio, our executive producer, Bob Canobio. For everyone here on Inside Boxing Live, we'll see you next time here.